But we're now talking about justice for prison abusers. Look, talking about prisoners' rights is widely heckled and derided in South Africa, and I get why. South Africans are tormented by crime. We're anxious and we're traumatized. We are a nation in the grips of ongoing waves of crime. And we want to see justice done, and there's very little sympathy. I can totally understand for people who are convicted of criminal activity, particularly violent criminal activity. And our overcrowded prisons are a testament to how stretched our criminal justice system is. Recidivism in South Africa. Recidivism is the rate at which offenders re-offend. It's estimated to be as high as 80%. That means prison is no deterrent. Prison isn't a place of rehabilitation. It's where people learn to become better criminals. It's people who continue in the cycle of poverty and committing crime. South African prisons are notoriously overcrowded. We have an official bed space of about 120,000. But the current prison population stands well over 140,000 inmates in South Africa. We are ranked 12th worldwide when it comes to overpopulated prisons. But despite this high incarceration rate, crime, particularly violent crime, continues to plague our society. And like in our society, violence is rampant outside as well as inside of our jam prison. Sexual abuse, of course, is probably the starkest mental image when we talk about men's prisons, sexual violence, rape. But despite the images of horrendous sexual violence in prisons, this year's report by the Judicial Inspectorate of Correctional Services reported that just 13 cases of sexual violence was reported. Only 13. So is that accurate? We ask that question. We speak to Unathi Mahlatsi, who is the program officer of Just Detention, an organization that seeks to end sexual violence in prison, as well as Rebecca Gore, an independent researcher who has worked with gender-based rights organizations, has clerked in the Constitutional Court, and has also been a researcher at the Judicial Inspectorate of Correctional Services under the former Constitutional Court Justice Edwin Cameron. And Unathi, I'm going to start with you. Only 13 cases of sexual violence reported in South African prisons over the last year. I stress reported. Either it says prisons are a fairly safe space, or, as far as I suspect, rampant violence and particularly sexual abuse is woefully underreported in South African prisons. Which is it, Unathi? Is Unathi there?
Hi, Lester. Hi, Lester. Yes, I'm here. Thank you so much for shining a spotlight on this urgent matter. And I just want to give a bit of background on my organization before I answer your question. My name is Unathi, as you said, and my pronouns are she, her. I work for a health and human rights organization that seeks to end sexual violence in all places of detention. And basically, our definition of detention includes situations in which law enforcement has control over a person, such as during a traffic stop or other pre-arrest situations. And we work to address this problem by holding government accountable for and building their capacity to address the problem. And we also work closely with survivors of sexual violence in detention to document their stories and use them as an awareness-raising tool to really shift, to challenge punitive public attitudes that see incarcerated people as not worthy of human rights. And then lastly, we work with psychosocial providers to ensure that survivors of sexual violence behind detention get the psychosocial support they need and deserve. So that's basically who we are as an organization, Just Detention International South Africa. Now to your question, you know, sexual violence in detention is something that we know happens, but it's something that's shrouded in stigma and taboo. So it's really, really difficult for survivors to come forward and report. So the reports that we have are just the tip of the iceberg. But it's also encouraging to see that there are people who are coming to report and that there's something that is being done by the department to address the problem, because before 2012, sexual assault cases were categorized with the general assault cases. But now we know that the Department of Correctional Services has started disaggregating those numbers, but we still don't know the official numbers. So what JICS has reported is just the tip of the iceberg, because there's a lot of repercussions for reporting. You could be the secondary re-victimization. There's also you can be punished for reporting because you live in the same environment with your perpetrator. So reported incidences are just the tip of the iceberg, unfortunately.
Rebecca Gore, you're now an independent researcher. You're not in South Africa at the moment, but you were a researcher for the Judicial Inspectorate of Correctional Services, compiling that report saying that the number of reported incidences of sexual violence in prisons is grossly underreported. But gosh, 13 almost seems a laughable number that would get reported to correctional services wardens. Good morning.
Good morning, Lester. Thank you so much for having me as part of this discussion. And I'm so pleased to be joined by Unati from JDI SA. We have worked together in the past, and it's great to have this platform to discuss these important issues. So, Lester, I think I would start by just adding 2 points. At the start of the discussion, you mentioned how controversial it is to discuss prisons in South Africa, and for reasons that I completely sympathize with. And just to add to that, the first point is that prisons are a microcosm for the social ills in our society in South Africa. And I think that's particularly poignant when we discuss violence and sexual violence, because sexual violence in South Africa against women, against men, is also underreported for various reasons. And then the second point, just to add when we're discussing prisons, is the fact that we think what goes on in prison is removed from our society, safely locked up, and that's not the case. Prison walls are porous, inmates come inside and outside our communities, and so any discussion we have about violence and sexual violence impacts our broader society. And on your point on the Judicial Inspectorate for Correctional Services reporting and finding sexual violence underreported, I completely echo Unati's analysis that it's deeply underreported for various reasons: stigma, fear of reprisals, and I would like to add gangs, rituals, and customs, and how deeply entrenched they are in prison culture. And another point to add is the fact that when our prison conditions are so bad and overcrowding is so rampant, sex becomes a tradable commodity. And that's actually a quote from the Jolly Commission from 2005. And so something that comes through in JICS's reports is that inmates, for example, need a blanket, need extra food, and sex becomes this commodity that you trade. And so I think there are various complex layers to this issue. And the fact that I think our first port of call is to deal with the underreporting and to help survivors and victims speak out and report in a safe way.
But let's just concentrate on this South African. There's a few messages here about, you know, to the tone of let them rot, who cares, they deserve what they get. When in one hand I can see, you know, South Africans in general are warranted in wanting a very strong moralistic response to crime and criminals in our criminal justice system, but at the same time it takes very much away from the humanity of even a person who has conducted the crime, and in many cases has not conducted a violent crime. They're in prison for conducting a economic crime. Is the South African knee-jerk response of they deserve what they get inside a South African prison? What's your thoughts on that, Rebecca?
Thank you for that important question, Lester. And I think there's one point speaks to the law and the second point speaks to reality. So on the first point, I'd say that we have a supreme constitution, a justiciable Bill of Rights, and the Bill of Rights itself provides these important rights to prisoners. So this discussion's already been, we as a society in our transition to democracy decided that prisons are entitled to dignified conditions. And that comes through the Correctional Services Act. So we have these legal obligations. The department has them. When I was at JICS, we had them. And government overall has these obligations to ensure prisoners live in dignified conditions. Then when we talk about reality, I, as we've been discussing, sympathize with discussing prisoners in the context of high rates of crime and violence. But I think as a society, we have to take a step back and ask, is this strategy of locking up thousands and thousands of people working, has it made us safer? And as you speak about economic crimes, what comes to mind for me is the fact that sex work is still sex work and sex workers are still criminalized, drug use. There's a whole plethora of various crimes that I do not believe warrant detention and incarceration. And so I think what we have to do as a society is maintain our legal obligations that are very clear in our constitution, but at the same time, go back to the drawing board and ask, is the strategy working? My personal view, it's not working. And I know Justice Cameron has written on this extensively. And so I think we have to strike this balance that there are certain violent individuals that may need to be imprisoned. But a lot of the time, and I'm sure Unati's experienced this as well, you go in and some people committed a petty offense and they are now awaiting trial for 2 years and they can't afford their bail amount and they now have to join a gang. And if you think about what goes on through that experience, and now that person may be innocent and they come back into our society, it's a harrowing thought. And so I think as a society, we have to sort of go back to the drawing board and ask what is and isn't working.
Well, Nati, you don't just focus on what happens behind prison bars, but also what happens on their way, particularly still in police custody. And periodically we do get reports, and particularly in Cape Town, of a person who was arrested, in many cases a sex worker would have been arrested, kept in detention, not taken to a police station, had been raped in detention by police. Also of people who have been raped in police holding cells, even before at making a first appearance in court. What is the rate of prevalence to in terms of course, the difference between reported cases and other reports to an organization like yourself? But how serious is this blight of sexual abuses on the way to detention in South Africa?
Thanks for that question, Lester. And as an organization, we have just recently started to explore the dynamics of sexual violence in police custody. Most of our work has been informed by experiences in men's facilities. But from what we are hearing from people, we've been having discussions, particularly with formerly incarcerated women. And what we are hearing is that it's very prevalent. There's a lot of sexual abuse happening in police custody. We worked with a group of women in Thoyando who do sex work, and one of them was held in police custody. And for the following morning, she spent a night in police custody with her then 3-year-old daughter. And in the morning, to be released, the officer demanded that she has sex with him. So basically, he raped her as an exchange for her release. So we know that these things happen in police custody. Based on the conversations we've had with formerly incarcerated women, Yeah, but we just don't have the official numbers, but we know it's very prevalent and it's an issue. We know that sexual violence does not start in most cases at the detention facility at prison. You are at risk from the minute you are apprehended by the police.
Well, to bring into this conversation, Teboho. Teboho is a trans woman who is a survivor of prison sexual assault. Teboho, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. We know that rape is used not only as or primarily as a from a point of power, but with your identity as a trans woman, what has been some of your experiences while being in Rustenburg prison?
Thank you, Lester, and everyone else. My experience is actually very traumatizing to this day, to be incarcerated at the Rustenburg police custody was actually one of the most traumatizing experience one could ever want to be in, because I was actually in police custody when I was still a minor, and I felt that I was forcefully and wrongfully accused of a crime I did not commit at that point in time. And I was actually, my rights as a human were actually violated, and that might have been because of my sexual orientation or my identity as a trans woman.
Teboho, how does a minor get into a environment where there are men, and particularly if you say you were irregularly arrested for a crime you didn't commit?
Yeah, that's one of the things I'm still trying to figure out even today, because I was forcefully put in the cells of which I know I didn't belong. But then maybe that was supposed to be some sort of scare tactic, of which then I thought maybe after a couple of minutes I would be let out. Maybe they were trying to scare me so that maybe I could actually tell the truth on the crime it was said of me to have committed. But then I actually spent 3 nights in cell with gangs, a whole little bunch of guys who committed even more serious crimes or who actually committed crimes. And I felt like I didn't actually belong there, of which it's true. I didn't actually belong in there. And I was violated. My human rights were violated. I was raped on that very same on the very same day. So it's something that still today I'm actually very still traumatized about. And I'm actually trying to understand how the justice system works and how the police force actually works when a mere minor gets put with adults who actually committed serious crimes.
Teboho, what were you arrested for?
I was wrongfully and forcefully arrested for actually stealing a phone, a mobile cell phone.
And I apologize for you having to relive the trauma of that particular experience, but many people and many listeners here of this glib attitude that people who find themselves arrested, whether there is evidence, whether rightfully or wrongfully, whether they go through with the due process of the criminal justice system, somehow believe that they deserve to be there. But without too much detail of your experience, you clearly did not deserve to be there. You clearly did not deserve to be violated and abused. But just to some insight into some people about what happened over those 3 days. And I apologize for you having to relive this trauma, Teboho.
Yeah, because I still have events that actually still up to this day play in my mind on the daily. So I'm actually very traumatized by the whole experience even today anyway. When I initially got in there the first night, I was actually... how should I put this? I was threatened, but then there was this other guy who actually was trying to protect me as a minor, you know. And then this guy had to actually be let out the second day, of which it was Saturday, because they only let me out on Sunday, of which Monday I was supposed to go back to school. So the whole event unfolded right after the guy was actually like my guardian angel, someone who actually protected me, was let out of the cells. I think he was supposed to be transferred to another prison or something like that. So the whole event unfolded from then when one night these guys started now when I was actually sleeping. Then they came and took turns one by one. And at that point in time, I mean, I felt very powerless. There's nothing I could possibly do. I mean, I'm surrounded by these guys. They're actually taking advantage of me, and I don't have a single strength in my body to actually scream out or actually get to fight them.
Gosh, Tomoko, you said something that you had school the next day. You were a school child when this happened.
That's why initially I said that I was a minor. So how does a minor be put in cells with people, probably murderers, you understand? Wow. So, I was actually 13 at the time, and I was in grade 7.
Wait, you were 13 years old?
I was 13 years old at the point in time.
Deboka, thanks so much. I am traumatized hearing this. I know that survivors of sexual assault relive their story and their experience every time, and they live with it. So thank you so much. Before we go to Eyewitness News, Unathi, I know you've been working a lot with survivors of abuse like Deboka. Please tell me that this is a most extreme of cases, because what is a 13-year-old doing in an adult prison? What is a 13-year-old doing arrested by police, not in the accompaniment of their parents? Why is a 13-year-old spending 3 nights in a police cell with other grown male prisoners? It makes absolutely no sense, Unathi.
Yeah, no, it doesn't, Lester. And there was such a gross miscarriage of justice in Deboka's story. I honestly don't know how that happened. There was no risk assessment that was done. She was thrown into a cell with older men, and she's a trans woman. She should have been kept with consultation with her in a place where she would have felt safer. So I honestly do not understand how that happened. That's why we need to do a lot of training and a lot of capacity building for law enforcement officials, because you find that most of the time there are those who use sexual violence as a weapon to punish people. But then some of the ones we've spoken to, you find that they just feel so incapacitated to deal with the problem because it's seen as part of detention and as part of prison life. I work with survivors, and the things we hear, the stories that the experiences that they've gone through, like life-changing trauma that they've experienced, that they deal with up to this day, and it's brutal. It's really brutal. So we need, as a society, to really shift the idea that sexual violence behind prisons makes us safe. It's not making us safe. It's just destroying people's lives. I mean, we are like the biggest incarcerator in Africa, but we are not the safest society.
Unathi, Rebecca, just hold on the line. Let's go to Eyewitness News. Let's get that out of the way, and we'll return to this conversation. Welcome back. 23 minutes to 12 o'clock. I'm just resettling ourselves here after that harrowing story by Deboka. We're talking about justice for prison abuse. We're talking about the level of sexual violence within South African prisons. And I totally disagree with Anonymous here, who deliberately wants to remain anonymous, because he says his voice is well known. And he says, joining the gang in prison is a decision you make. No one is forced to join the gang. And yes, it's a place where you must survive. Remember, it's man against man. You have to have a strong mind so you can beat them. Imagine you can just will yourself not to be sexually assaulted, eh? Imagine you can just will yourself not to be in a place where you could be attacked and assaulted. If only Deboka just willed herself. If only she was just strong. joined still by Unathi Matlat as well as Rebecca Gore. Unathi works for an organization called Just Detention South Africa. Rebecca Gore is an independent researcher who has worked with the Judicial Inspectorate of Correctional Services under Justice Edwin Cameron. Rebecca, I want to read this message here from Ahmad in Obson. Ahmad says, good morning, Lester. Your interview about sexual abuse in prisons reminds me of the time I was locked up in prison in Paulsmoor in August 2016. After I was remanded into custody, we ended up at Paulsmoor late afternoon and we were put in what is called the Hofferkamer. Basically, the room you get put in when you arrive from court before assigned to a section. That night, we were more than 30 guys in that room, and as a first timer, I was nervous. I tried to stay alert just in case, tried to stay awake all night. Long story short, the next morning, the warders came into the Hofferkamer and asked if anyone had complaints. To my shock, a young guy told the warder that two guys raped him during the night. I was shocked because they were sleeping less than 5 meters away from me, and I didn't hear a thing. The guy was taken to the doctor, and the two guys accused of raping him were moved by the warders. As long as I live, I won't forget that night. That's a message from Ahmad in OBS. It's a very graphic, but also, I assume, Rebecca, a very regular experience by many who find themselves either as an awaiting prisoner, a remand prisoner, or someone who is serving a convicted sentence.
Thank you, Lester, for going through that comment. And thank you to Ahmad for sharing that very visceral account of his experience. And I think being a bystander to this really speaks to how rampant the problem is. But I think it also speaks to the fact that sexual violence is so part of our society, whether you're in prison and out of prison. And the shock, he said that he was less than 5 meters away. And I think that speaks to a few of us in general society, where you may speak to friends who have also been survivors of victims of sexual violence. And you're quite shocked to think that something like that could happen by maybe someone they know or you know. But going back to the prison environment, and something I pointed out, how sexual violence is linked to conditions. And in last year, when I was with the Judicial Inspectorate for Correctional Services, we undertook a visit to Paulsmoor. And what we found in Medium B is that the lights are not working. They are not working in the cells. They are not working in the passages. And so it speaks to this idea that if we do not have lights, how are officials, how are fellow inmates meant to see what is going on? How can we even see who the perpetrators are? How can inmates lay these complaints with the right facts and the right information if they feel brave and courageous enough to do so? So it's a deeply complex issue. And I think Ahmad bringing it to light through that story, in addition to Tabogo's really, really harrowing account, really shows how deeply complex the problem is.
Unathi, again, I'm largely disappointed by a stream of comment that says that people deserve prison and what comes along with it. And when we talk about developing a culture, that says we say down with gender-based violence and sexual violence outside and inside prisons, does it mean that we're as a society, if we're screaming for justice for victims outside, we should also be screaming and shouting for justice for victims of sexual violence inside prison as well? How do we live in a society where we don't want sexual violence outside of prisons, but you know what, they sort of deserve it, they're inside, they're there paying for their crimes, whatever happens to them inside prison, that's their thing? How do we live in this society that is almost schizophrenic in how we say who deserves sexual violence and who does not, Unathi?
Yeah, that's a tough question, Lester, because I think people in South Africa are just so tired of living in such a violent society. So most of that is taken out on incarcerated people. You know, it's an understandable response at some level, but it's not going to make us safe. No one deserves to be raped. When a government takes away someone's liberty, it takes on an absolute responsibility to keep that person safe. And we as a society, we need to come to a place where we do not condone sexual violence. It does not matter where it's happening, whether it's happening in the community or it's happening in prisons. Sexual violence is a crime. It's a harrowing experience that ruins people's lives. So I really think as a society, we need to look at ourselves and just really reflect when we say we are against sexual violence. What do we actually mean? Are there places where we say, okay, it's okay for someone to be sexually violated? Like you said, for lack of a better word, we're like a schizophrenic society. And it's not making us safe. It's not decreasing crime rates, people being raped in prisons. People are sent to prisons to be rehabilitated so that they can come back and be members of society. Unfortunately, there's no place where we throw people forever. You know, people have to be rehabilitated so that they can be reintegrated back into society.
What do you think, you know, the tropes of prison? I'm thinking now of the Papa Wach for You campaign. I think it was a Arrive Alive campaign, if I'm not mistaken. You had this very, you know, scary looking, looks like the trope, the stereotype of what a prison gangster would look like. And the tagline was, Papa Wach for You. What do you think what impact that has on how we see what prison spaces are actually supposed to be for?
I think what that does is just normalize sexual violence behind bars. It plants in people's minds that I'm going to prison to be raped. But that's not why we have prisons. We have prisons so that they can rehabilitate people, so that they can come back into society. So I think all that it does, it sort of also justifies the rape that happens in detention. And I think we should really, really fight against those sort of tropes and the jokes that go around saying, don't drop the soap.
Yeah.
Don't drop the soap, you know. It's not a joke. You know, prisoner rape is not a punchline. It's a violence that destroys people's lives, and people live with that trauma for the rest of their lives, and people are released back into societies. I know that's a selfish reason of going about it, but people come back into societies. These are our brothers. These are our sisters. These are our mothers, you know. So, and so they come back, and mostly coming back into marginalized communities that already have such high levels of trauma and violence, you know. So it's this vicious cycle that perpetrates it's a never ending loop of violence, trauma, and
Rebecca, let's talk about interventions. And we have a recidivism rate in South Africa believed to be as high as 80%. That is 80% of people who have been incarcerated return to a prison system. Ivan has a very important point here. Lest the people who say that prisoners deserve what they get are short-sighted. At some stage, these severely damaged and often angry people come out again into society. You come in with a prison record, which means your likelihood of getting a job is greatly diminished. You then spiral into the cycle of crime, incarceration, violence on the inside, and then coming out again. I know diagnosing and finding an intervention, if it was a quick intervention, we would have done so already. But as part of your time at the Judicial Inspectorate of Correctional Services, what have been some of the policy suggestions to a Department of Correctional Services that says, look, let's deal with firstly prison violence on the inside. Let's develop a cogent policy of rehabilitation and corrections. Let's make sure that when people get out of prison, they can fall into a society. But at the same time, it's difficult outside already. If we're sitting with the broad definition of 45% unemployment in South Africa. The revolving door just keeps on spinning.
Thank you for that question. And I think it speaks to at least two points. I think the first is what interventions could take place in the broader criminal justice space. And unfortunately, Lester, I do think there are clear interventions that could have and should have, and still we must lobby for them to take place. And these are overnight changes that would significantly impact the prison population. So an example to talk about is drug addiction. And I'm talking about petty drug offenses and how criminalizing that overnight would drastically impact the prison population. And why not trigger or nudge these persons in the direction of dealing with drug addiction through public health interventions? Because one of the mistakes we've made mirroring the war on drugs in America is to see the problem of drugs as a criminal issue when really it's a public health issue. So I do believe there are overnight interventions in the short term, some in the medium long term that will require more capacity building to deal with how we see various crimes and how we see how people should deal with these crimes and deal with these high risk behaviors. Let's rather put it that way, it's high risk behaviors. But going back to just focusing on prisons and the work of JICS. So some interventions I could discuss is firstly, at JICS, we had an incredible judgment by the Constitutional Court affirming JICS's independence as an oversight body. And while I was at JICS, there was a bill in place, and I believe that a lot of work is still being done on it. My colleagues are working very, very hard on it. And part of it is to sort of strengthen the powers of the oversight body, which is key. And I believe that stretches across various parts of South Africa. We need to strengthen our oversight and our accountability institutions. And one of the points in the bill was to include explicitly reporting on sexual violence. So to say that the department has an obligation to clearly report these allegations of sexual violence and these complaints, not just as assault, but in their own standing as sexual acts of sexual violence. Then I think the other point would be how JICS has engaged with DCS on better rehabilitation programs. And there have been various memorandums of understandings and discussions with the NPA and with SAPS. And I think when we talk about prison accountability, it's not just between JICS and DCS. It goes through the various layers of the criminal justice system. So if an inmate complains about, for example, sexual violence, JICS can help to ensure that inmate does report it to the police, but then it's for the police to take it up and it's for the NPA to investigate. And so all these different leverages of our criminal justice system need to be in place and need to be functioning. And that goes back to this idea of we need a capable, well-capacitated state. We need that, especially in accountability and especially in justice. And so there's micro issues and broader systemic issues at play.
Unathi Matlati, Program Officer at Just Attention. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. I'm very, very glad to extend this conversation at another time. But Unathi, thanks so much for joining us. Rebecca Gore, really appreciate your time. We have time to play some of your voice notes and your response. But thank you so much for joining us here on The Morning Review.